Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Ray McLean. Ray is the founder and president of the Commercial REO Association. Ray has a varied background in commercial real estate that started 30 years ago, including developing apartment complexes and condo projects and even a mini warehouse. And in 2009, he founded the Commercial REO Brokers Association just in time to take advantage of what probably is about to happen. Ray, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
2006, I doubt anybody thought we would be needing an REO association connected with commercial real estate. Back then, how were people feeling about their investments? So what was the attitude of the buyer in 2006 as far as confidence level that they were doing the right thing?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much kind of just follows the residential market. A lot of people that own commercial saw the values jump and the cap rates compress, and they were able to finance money out of the properties and go buy more. So it was the same kind of speculation fever. And then you had people that had maybe flipped a few houses that were now moving into multifamily or maybe a little retail. So it was basically a feeding frenzy, just like the residential new home market was.
Okay. And you even got fed customers from the residential side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of the people that speculated and started making money in residential decided, maybe they should move into some commercial space. Most practical place to go with for somebody mostly familiar with residential is multifamily. So that's kind of a migration point. But some of them would go straight to retail or office or other asset classes.
You know, we're kind of familiar with the story of the residential lending and how that went with stated income loans and that type of thing. Did commercial real estate have a similar product that allowed things to progress probably further than they might have?
Absolutely. One of the leading companies, asset management companies and special servicers, is a company called Bayview Financial out of Florida. And they had several lending arms, and they were their kind of little niche was owner-occupied, and they would go 95% owner-occupied loans for people that wanted to buy their own, a doctor wanted to buy a little office condo, somebody had a beauty shop and wanted to buy a little, buy a little retail office or a retail building to run their beauty shop in. They would give you 95% financing, and in many cases, stated income. That was all sold into the CMBS market. And over the last few years, most of that stuff's coming back now.
Now, let's just go ahead and tell us what the CMBS market is for people that might not know.
Okay, sorry. Commercial mortgage-backed securities. A lot of people are familiar with the securitization of mortgages from the residential, which are MBS, mortgage-backed securities, where most of the major lenders, mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers, would sell the real estate loans to a larger bank that would then group them together in $100 million type pools, and then sell interest in those pools, CDOs, and that was the way that there was all this money from all over the world that were buying these mortgage-backed securities. The same thing was going on in commercial. They just call them CMBS, or commercial mortgage-backed securities.
So in the commercial world, there was really very few portfolio loans at the peak of the market.
You still have Wells Fargo and B of A and Chase and a lot of the major banks held that. You have a lot of insurance companies that held that. But, typically the insurance companies are more conservative. They wanted to see, 20, 30% down. They only wanted to go into prime locations. They wanted to see a debt-to-service ratio of about 125%. And the CMBS market, the underwriting standards just kept getting looser and looser as because there was so much demand for the product. You had all the stockbrokers, you had Wall Street calling investors all over the world, basically selling this stuff, and they had more people wanting it than they had product. So some of the things that the CMBS market did that most of the banks didn't do was that they lowered the debt-to-service coverage ratio down to 100%. In some cases, they would make it even less than that, and they would say, it's going to take you a year. Maybe it's a new project. It's going to take you another couple of years to get to break even. So we'll take some of the loan money, and we're going to set that aside as a pool to be able to carry your loan negative for 6 months or a year until you lease it up, and then it'll carry itself. And then you'll have the 1.25 debt service ratio. Well, that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
The market collapsed on them, and as soon as they ran out of their little slush fund, so to speak, those properties went to default.
At the time that you had 95% owner-occupant financing, what was non-owner-occupant financing? As far as a down payment?
Again, most of the banks were at 20-25%. But some of them, especially a lot of the community banks, went up to 80%. And the CMBS market had 80% and 85% on non-owner occupied properties for investment.
You mentioned the term stated income. Does that mean the same thing in commercial? Is it stated income of the asset or stated income of the individual?
Both.
Okay.
You know, basically, you're not providing them tax returns. You're just giving them maybe just a financial of what the property is, or in some cases what they thought the property was going to be once it was leased up and that kind of.
Okay.
So they're very loose underwriting guidelines.
Okay.
Everybody wanted to make a loan. You know, the broker wanted to do it. The buyer was, chomping at the bit. The conduits were, looking for inventory. The brokers that were selling the CDOs wanted more product. There's just insatiable appetite out there worldwide to buy our mortgage-backed securities.
Now, how is that market different today, the CMBS?
Well, it's coming back. Kind of give you an idea of what happened. The roller coaster we're on with the commercial is in 07 was the peak of the commercial real estate market, not only in pricing, but also in quantity of transactions and dollar amount of transaction. And to give you kind of an example, the mortgage-backed security industry grew to about $260 billion in 07. That was how much mortgage-backed securities. Now, you add maybe 20% to that, and you'll know what the total transaction volume was. And again, that wasn't 100% of the business. CMBS is somewhere less than 50% of all the mortgages that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But during this particular time, they were probably accounting for 80% of the business in 07. Okay. But there's still a lot of other mortgages which were held by the banks and the insurance companies, and so when the bubble burst in the commercial in 07, 08, we dropped about half of that, $100 and some billion in transactions, and by 09, the market had almost totally stopped, and we had $2.9 billion in CMBS mortgages. So from 270 to 2.9, that's like a 99% drop.
Yeah. Okay?
And you can confirm that because, I've been going to trade shows from Source Media and Green Pearl and IMN and BizNow, and we put on our own trade shows and dinners, and we put on these panels, and you talk to people, even the people that run C.B. Richard Ellis, one of the shows a year or so ago, he admitted that C.B. Richard Ellis, their transaction volume dropped 95% from the high of 07 to 09.
Mm.
So what does that mean to the brokers, the individual brokers? 95% of them are starving.
Sure.
Okay? And those numbers are pretty much consistent with all the major commercial brokerage houses. I had something published somewhere. I've got a document that showed anywhere from 90% to 80%, from 95% to 80% drop in transaction volume in 09, by the major companies. Some of them reported 80%, some of them were 95%. But then you had a lot of the little companies that have all just went out of business. In 2010, we finally kind of got a little bit of a restart of that business, but it's very selective, and we did about, and I've heard two different numbers, I'm not sure which is correct, it's between $10 and $12 billion of CMBS market, our mortgages were sold in 2009. So we went from 2.9 to say 10, that's a 200% increase or 300% increase, say from 3 to 10, about a 300% increase. So it's a huge up jump, but considering you're starting from almost zero, it still doesn't really help the brokers or the market or the pricing or anything. Last year, or this year, it's projected that we're gonna go from 10 billion or 12 to somewhere around 30 to 50 are the numbers that people are projecting, which means it's going to triple again, okay? Maybe five times again, but we're going to be at 50 billion, which is 50, 152. Say 20% now of where we were at the peak, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we've still got a long way to go, but we're on a pretty steep curve coming back. So, if we do 30 to 50 this year, people are saying, well, we could do 100, 150 next year. And so we're looking at a couple of years. We should be back into kind of like a more stable CMBS market, a more stable transactions, quantity of transactions, where the brokers can start making a living again.
As the quality of the paper in the CMBS, it must have improved.
Today you don't sell you can't sell the trash today. You really have to have decent equities in these properties. In some cases, these are things that are legacy type financing going on. Realize that in the CMBS market, the mortgages in the CMBS market are very similar to like the subprime in the residential.
Right.
I know you've got a big background in residential. A typical loan would be for 5 years, a balloon in 5 years. It might be adjustable for that 5 years. It might be fixed, but mostly they were adjustable for 5, 7, or 10 years, and then they have a balloon. They have to be refinanced, and that's what's kind of killed this whole market because we have $1.4 trillion in CMBS that's in the process of being refinanced from last year and this year and the next 2 or 3 years. And again, most of that stuff that went on the books in 07, 06, and 07 is upside down now.
Sure.
So there was a big concern that we were going to have a crash in the CMBS market and the commercial real estate market as these funds became due because they've been fractionalized and they've been sliced and diced. You have all these different investor groups and different classes of the CMBS market that are all fighting for their particular class, their interests. I don't know if you're familiar with how you have A, B, C, D, paper kind of.
Yeah, tranches.
CMBS, so you have all these different people have different interests, and there was a belief that, and a lot of the people that invested in, say, a hedge fund that says they took money from their investors and said, we want it for 5 years, and then we're going to give it back to you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you some return. And then they bought some of these mortgage-backed securities, and now they have promised their investors they have to give that money back. They're thinking they're going to have to start a foreclosure process to be able to pay off their investors. And so everybody thought that was going to be, crash the market, and it has put a lot of pressure on the market, and some people are being foreclosed. But basically, nobody wants to take this property back. Nobody wants to take these losses. And so a lot of these people that they thought were going to just lose their property and because there was no way they could actually refinance it because they're upside down, they're finding ways to refinance it. They're giving them extensions. They're asking them to bring some money into the table. There's a lot of people that are getting involved that'll put some money in to pay the loan down a little bit. and take maybe a priority interest in the property, or put a hard money second or third on this property to be able to have the note rewritten, extended, maybe have the interest rates lowered for a few years. And there's a lot of different ways people are structuring these transactions as debt and equity to get to some of this prime real estate. Because it's not being foreclosed and brought to market how you would normally think it would be. It's just so much of a problem. Nobody really wants to crash the market anymore, which they pretty much already did for a lot of areas.
Well, we just bought a building, and I don't think there's anything that's sold in this complex other than this particular REO. So that's one of the problems, is someone gets a deal from a lender. So this is a building that was about $1 million in 06, and we just bought it for $317. So if you have a loan in there, you could have a loan, if you're an owner-occupant, of $950.
Sure.
That would be a pretty challenging thing to get a refi if there's only one comp. So you do have lenders that are just saying, okay, let's make a deal. I guess my question is, do they have the flexibility to call the shots on what they're allowed to do, or is there some type of organization that looks over their shoulder and says, no, you can't do that?
Well, yes, obviously you have people that have got, everybody's got rules. It is different. The CMBS market, it's the, let me kind of give a little quick background of CMBS. When you have a CMBS loan, say the interest rate is at 5%,
mm-hmm.
or say it's a 6%. The way they structure that is they'll take that 6% loan and they'll kind of bifurcate it into pieces, and they'll call it an A piece and a B piece. So the A piece, they'll say, well, the A piece, we're not going to give you 6% interest. We're only going to give you, say, 5% interest, and we're going to sell most of it as the A piece.
And that's
one note, it's one loan. And then we'll take another piece of it, and we'll say, this is going to be the B piece. It's a subordinate to the A getting all their interest and all their profits, okay?
So that's a tranche.
That's a tranche.
Okay.
The B piece will get maybe 7% interest. So they're getting a higher interest, but they're kind of like a second. It's not like a first and a second, like in residential or commercial, but it still plays the same way. All one note, it's all one loan, and they just split these out. And sometimes they dice and slice these in, 20 pieces. So the B piece is at risk, and if the loan does go bad, the B piece is the one that loses all of their money first before anybody in the A piece would lose any money.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, in order to try to be able to sell the B piece to people, they said, well, is consideration if the property goes into default, if you are an investor in the B piece, you're the ones that are going to get to call the shots as to whether or not we have to foreclose the property or we're going to do a workout. Well, obviously, the BPs, in most cases today, are going to get wiped out. So they don't want a foreclosure, and they're going to say, we want to do a loan modification. And the special servicer, when it goes to default, it gets assigned to a workout group called special servicers, and that special servicer actually works for the owners of the B part. It's his job to protect the B part. So it's their job to do whatever they can to do some kind of a workout so the B people don't get wiped out.
Okay, that's a great explanation. Now, if I had a loan from Wells Fargo or a local bank, are there guidelines that, obviously they probably have some oversight that might restrict what they can do, or is it still real flexible?
Yes, they do. They do have guidelines, and they do have sections from their regulators. One of the things that happened in 09 or beginning of 2010, I think it was the end of 2009, when it was obvious that we were facing a major crash in the not only CMBS market, but basically the commercial real estate market, and the banks were getting defaults. Everybody's tenants were. Landlords were losing tenants, the tenants were staying or asking for concessions, or they're just not paying on a regular basis. Everybody is struggling with their bills. The banks got hit with unbelievable defaults on their commercial. And so I think they went and talked to some of the regulators, the OTC or, and the FDIC, and said, you know, we're in big trouble here. And there's a regulation, it's a long-standing regulation from the regulators that says whether you're a state charter or federal starter, they, you know, but the FDIC is the one that's insuring the deposits, so they, you know, they're the kind of ones in control.
Mm-hmm.
And so the FDIC had a long-standing regulation that said if somebody does not make your payments on your loan and it is 60 days delinquent, you must put it on a call sheet, which is kind of like a report to the FDIC that says, here's all the people that aren't paying me, and here's what's going on, and here's what, you know, it's kind of, you know, you have to kind of write it up into the file and list that as, you know, in, as some kind of a degraded property, and maybe start writing it down. And so it was so profuse back, I think it was around October, November of 2009, that the FDIC came in and said, you know what, we're going to extend that. Instead of you having to report in 60 days that you've got a non-performing loan, we're going to give you 6 months. So we're increasing that from 60 to 180 days. And during the 6 months, we want you to do a loan mod. Do whatever you can. Just get it into some kind of a loan mod. Get it performing again. And depends upon how you do it, you might not even have to ever report it on your books as a, you know, on your call sheets. So the banks, you know, went about doing that and starting to rewrite all of their loans and give people extensions is basically what they were doing. Here, I'll give you 6 months, I'll give you a year extension, 2 year extension, something to try to you know, get it so they're not in default. So what happened was that now the regulators are now some of the regulators are coming in doing their inspections on the banks and looking at the books. And they're finding all these things that aren't on the call sheets that should be there, that says, you know, you've extended this loan. And when they look at it, they started reporting back to the banks and writing the banks up and saying, hey, you know what? The regulations are that you can't extend a loan or rewrite a loan that is not collateralized. If it's upside down, you can't extend a loan that's upside down. That was another guideline,
basically. Okay.
So what they did was they came back and said, okay, you know what, just ignore that rule. We're going to tell all the regulators that come in to inspect your books to ignore that rule. So go ahead and keep giving people extensions. Even if they're, you know, it's $1 million loan and there's only 300,000 equity there, extend it anyway. We're not going to write you up for that anymore.
Okay.
Those are some of the things that they've kind of done to try to slow this down and to stop from having to close down all the banks that they probably need to.
That makes sense. That's the mark-to-market rules changes.
Well, that was another rule, too. Yeah. I mean, and I've asked a lot of bankers, instead of mark-to-market, we're going to use something called fair value, which they're probably going to have to go back to mark-to-market because the Europeans and the rest of the world don't like that either. And I've talked to people, what's mark-to-market? Well, mark-to-market is what they, you know, I mean, what's the fair value? I said, well, what's the fair value? And you can see their point that on the fair value, they say, well, why should I have to take that $1 million loan and mark it down to $300,000 if the guy, especially maybe he's making his payments or we've got a personal guarantee on him? You know, we don't have to try to liquidate this at $300,000 today, okay?
Correct.
We don't plan to. So why should we have to mark it to $300,000? So what do you mark it at? Well, and when I've talked to some of the banks and people, the chief credit officers that actually do these things, they said it's pretty much whatever we can afford. So, you know, they decide how much profits they've made this quarter, and then they take those profits, they say, okay, we've now got, you know, $300 million this quarter. We can write down some of these loans some more. And so they're kind of writing them down as they have profits to cover them. Otherwise, it comes out of their, if they don't have the profits, then it comes right out of their equity, and now they're
in big trouble.
They're going to get a C&D letter, or they're going to get shut down if their equity gets wiped out, which, you know, can get wiped out very quickly when you're 95% levered, and you have this type of commercial property problems as well as your residential problems.
Okay, Ray, we've reached the end of this segment. Let's mention your website so people can go there and find out about becoming a commercial REO broker and taking advantage of the education that you're providing.
Sure. It's the Commercial REO Brokers Association. That's a lot to type, so we use an acronym, which is CREOBA.com, CREOBA.com.
All right. Appreciate that. This has been Ray McLean. He's the president and founder of Commercial REO Brokers Association, and we will pick this up on the next segment.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.